What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd and my co-host Canucks Insider Thomas Drantz here. Drantz, of course, covering the team with The Athletic as well. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. It's a crossover Wednesday, and Drantzer, officially the Canucks are Pacific Division champs after that win over the Flames last night.
So you saw the clip of Rick Tocchet making the joke, like, we played loose.
Yeah.
And no one laughs. I think people thought he was serious because that looked nothing like a Canucks game. Did you get that sense too?
No, it was, especially once they were up. And not like how normally when they're up in the game, they go into lockdown mode. It was like, well, we're going to win this game and we're going to win the Pacific Division. And they kind of knew it at that point.
Like, don't get me wrong. Great show. Tons of fun. Atmosphere looked awesome. Mm-hmm. I was unable to go. I was crushing some features. But that just had almost no relationship to the way this Canucks team has played all season. Just like trading chances, surrendering 40 shots. And, then Tocchet implies heavily postgame that they're going to rest guys going into Winnipeg. It's mm-hmm. like, oh boy, please let the playoffs begin soon.
Yeah, that's the thing. It would be foolish to try to glean anything from that game. Because as you said, so far away from what the Canucks have normally looked like. I mean, they played well. They were better than the Flames. But it just wasn't a Canucks-style game. And it wasn't a playoff-style game. It wasn't anything close to a playoff-style game. For obvious reasons. The Flames are done. They're going on holiday, as Philip Roenick said.
Ian Cole dropped the term playoff-adjacent, which I thought was a... Obviously, that appealed to me, but he dropped the term playoff adjacent to describe a style of game in a conversation I had with him in Edmonton over the weekend, and I loved it. I obviously filed it away, and it's like, that was all-star adjacent?
Yeah.
And by the way, that's fine. Like, cool. I think every Canucks player will come out of that game feeling pretty confident, feeling pretty good. One last big show to the fans on Fan Appreciation Night. Clinch the Pacific Division.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, it's cool. I know in hockey, everyone has to, like, caption it with, like, it's not our main goal or we're not satisfied, but it's awesome, man. This team won the division.
Mm-hmm.
This division has the defending champs in it. This division has Connor McDavid in his prime in it.
Yep.
This division has an LA team that added Pierre-Luc Dubois in the offseason. A Seattle Kraken team that beat the Colorado Avalanche in the playoffs last year. Like, that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I think find joy where you can. That is an incredible accomplishment, a fitting capstone on what's been a dream campaign for this club. And I do just wish there was like more latitude
to celebrate just, the division.
To just like find joy where you can. It's pro hockey, man. It's tough.
Yeah. Yeah, and I do think it's a nice capstone for the team's season. Kind of gives them something tangible to take away from what has been a wildly impressive regular season. And obviously it would have been a wildly impressive regular season even if they hadn't won the division, right? Although it would have felt bad losing it at the end to the Oilers. But now you have kind of an official on your resume. We were the division champs. We were the best team out of, as you said, a pretty challenging division. And that, again, it was fun for the fans. Look, I said on the show yesterday, my number one hope for the game last night was for the fans to enjoy it. And that sounds corny, and it is, but they got that. And I was happy for them to get that, to get another fun, hey, they're scoring goals, they're winning comfortably. There was some physical stuff, which, by the way, my immediate reaction when the scrum started was like, Nobody get hurt in this situation against the Calgary Flames. Oh my gosh.
But that's like the meme that's like, somebody's going to jail, but it's not going to be me. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I hope 6'8" Adam Klapka doesn't hurt Philip Hronik or Connor Garland, and then Connor Garland overpowers him. That was cool.
It was great.
The Philip Hronik chirp.
Mm-hmm.
Most we've heard him talk all year. But I mean, that was good stuff.
He picks his moments.
Yeah, although he didn't factor in garbage bag day and some of the media obligations that come, team party.
Mm-hmm.
So half points. No, I'm just kidding. It was an awesome
It was
shirt.
Great.
It was really cool.
It was
cool.
great.
what? And then
I feel sorry for you is just such a devastating retort. It works in so many situations.
Well, it's the who's this clown, right?
Implying, yeah, exactly.
Implying that you're not just a clown, but one of the lesser known clowns. And then was it Pospisil who had the quote about Hoaglander being 5'3" after the game?
Yeah,
and it's like, great, you don't play these guys for five
months.
Yeah,
it was Pospisil, I think. No, it was Klapka, I thought.
No, it wasn't. It was the guy who cross-checked Hoaglander.
Or who Hoaglander cross-checked.
Hoaglander cross-checked.
I thought that was Klapka, but maybe not.
No,
Klapka. I'm confused.
Klapka hitting, I mean, Hoaglander literally would have had to have his, he'd have to be doing the Y from YMCA. But like, I don't know, that was lame. Are the Flames that bad? Like, the Canucks were at like 60% and the Flames weren't close.
No. They were checked out.
Yeah.
100% checked out.
Well, and so here's one thing, you know, far be it for me to randomly nurse a, I don't know, what's it called? I've had,
grudge?
Not a grudge, more just like something that annoys me.
I don't know.
Yeah, anyway.
A bugaboo?
Far be it from me to nurse a bugaboo. But I watched hockey all night last night while working. And
a pet peeve.
A pet peeve, sure.
There we go.
And, I mean, it was hilarious to watch those three Eastern games, right? Like, Detroit just like Lucas Raymond doing everything he can to prevent a choke job against the Montreal Canadiens over a set of two games. Hilarious. You know, the Washington Capitals and the inevitability that they were going to clinch a playoff berth on an empty net. And then it not being necessary, but Tortorella not being aware of that. So anyway, you have the backdoor elimination of two teams on an empty net goal. Who wants this? Who wants this to, like, if you've been saying, look at the way race in the East, the NHL system's not broken. This is riveting. It's like, first of all, the hockey's been bad.
Yeah, they are all bad teams. Like, which cuts both ways, though, right?
Oh, yeah, no, it's exciting. It's exciting to watch the Detroit Red Wings, like, fumble about trying to beat the Habs, sure. Can't even take care of business against the Habs, who are self-consciously rebuilding and, like, blooding college free agents in their lineup right now. Sure. But, like, the incentives at play are insane. They make no sense. And then the Canucks are playing at a 50, 60% pace on a game that they can clinch the Pacific Division. You know, they're going to go to Winnipeg on Thursday. That game's going to decide, like, which team finishes second in the conference. I mean, Canucks could potentially elevate all the way up to first. Neither team's going to, like, play their lineup.
Mm-hmm.
How's that good? The current format just leaves way too many of these games that don't matter at the end of the season. It's like 20% of the campaign doesn't matter. It drives me mental. And I felt like last night was just, like, toxic incentives left, right, and center that really obscured, for me anyway, took away from what should have been a really dramatic fun night of hockey.
All right, it's Wednesday. That means it is time for the crossover with our pals Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal from Donnie and Dolly on Check TV. You can check it out Monday to Friday, 10 to noon. The crossover is brought to you by Passant Motors, powering the playoff drive, home of over 400 pre-owned vehicles. And where the players go. Rick, Don, how's it going, guys?
Good.
Good, good. You didn't have fun last night watching those games?
Yeah.
I did, but it was also just, it could be so much better. Like, the Canucks put on a great show for their fans, and I was happy for that, but that did not look like Canucks hockey. Mm. We all know that, right? I mean, the team was trading chances and on and on. You know how you know it wasn't the Canucks brand of hockey? The Canucks traded chances willingly with the Flames all night, and Rick Tocchet made a joke about it postgame. How out of character is that, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
giving up 40 shots.
Yeah, like it was a fun night. It was.
But I was
fun
talking
night.
More about the Wings and Habs was fun.
I mean, it was amazing. But then it ends with a backdoor elimination of two teams on an empty net goal because a coach didn't understand in real time the game state in the other contest. And I mean, if you had a system like the NBA, for example, right? Then Philadelphia wouldn't be in a position where they're like, well, we don't care how many points we get. We just need to pass this one team. They'd still be conscious of maximizing their total amount of points. They wouldn't be in a position where the incentives would cause them to be making a weird decision, and you wouldn't have a backdoor elimination of two teams as a result of an empty net goal that actually ended up serving no purpose. I don't want to see that be how teams' playoff fates are decided. I mean, I don't want to see a team with a minus 37
goal
differential.
I like the air of desperation in both those locations last night. It was fun, and then happening at the same time.
But I
like that.
You still would get that with a play-in, though, Donnie, because there'd still be one team that was going to miss out on that play-in entirely. There'd still be, you only want to play one game versus two games, so there'd still be a huge incentive to finish eight versus finishing 9 or 10. I mean, for me, there'd just be more to play with. The incentives would be healthier. And then also, if you're someone who says, hey, the last 3 weeks in the East, that's proof that you don't need a play-in, like, how about going through the last 2 weeks in the East and then these teams still have to beat up on one another head to head to make the playoffs? Like, that's just more fun, more desperation, more of the good stuff that we saw last night, and fewer of the toxic incentives that ultimately shape the outcomes.
And maybe more revenue. So it would be more
revenue.
So it's going to
happen. I don't care about that. I just want to enjoy the product. not my wallet, Donnie.
Well, no, that's maybe where where I'm at. But it's funny, we brought up 1991 today, that season, because the Canucks made the playoffs that year and their goal differential was the worst of all time for a playoff team.
Yep.
It was a minus 72. But back then, we were complaining way too many teams in the playoffs. So teams like that were making the playoffs. 16 of 21 teams. Things have changed. They'll change again. There'll be a play-in tournament for sure.
Somewhere down. And Thomas, the parity, though, look at the parity in the East, and you can't complain about that. You can't complain about every night hockey fans are, checking scores at nighttime, scoreboard watching, more teams are in it in the playoff races. That's what they wanted with parity. They got it.
I'm talking about expanding. Like, I'm talking about leaving more teams in it for longer. I'm talking about making it so that the Wild and the St. Louis Blues, both of whom might finish with more points than the eighth team in the East, don't spend the last 2 weeks playing meaningless games having already been eliminated. I mean, if you're going to have parity and if you're going to tout parity, then expanding the pathway for that parity to actually matter is logical.
And to your point, Donnie, back in the day, 16 out of 21 teams, now it's 16 out of 32. It's going to be 16 out of 34 probably pretty soon if you hear people talking, right, with the NHL looking at expansion again. And at that point, I think that's going to be the first time ever that fewer than half of the teams have made the NHL playoffs. That feels like a logical time to update the process, whether it's expanding the field, a play-in, whatever it is, because it'll be so skewed. The playoff field will be so skewed compared to what it was for so much of the league's history at that point.
That's a good point about St. Louis and the Wild. But like I say, you're absolutely right, Jamie. It's going to happen. And it's mostly based less on entertainment. Well, I guess the entertainment would have something to do with it. But it's going to be more revenue, right?
Oh,
so it'll happen. You have to have more than half the teams making the playoffs.
Yeah. All right. So Canucks win the Pacific Division title. And I think the players have acknowledged, it means something. But they're also a little cagey about, exactly how much it means. How much does it mean for you two to see them take the Pacific Division title this year?
Well, in a year when no one expected it, Jamie, I mean, can anybody stand up anywhere in the summer? I remember golfing last summer and everyone saying, they're not going to make the playoffs. The president of this hockey club came out at a news conference and said, everything has to go right for us to make the playoffs. He never mentioned anything about a division title. nobody expected this. There isn't anybody anybody can say that they predicted this. 50 wins. Winning the Pacific Division, only the third time in franchise history, 50 wins. Look at their home record, 27-9-5, tied for second best. I mean, I give a lot of the credit, guys. You can hand the credit out anywhere you want, but Rick Tocchet, the culture he changed, the accountability, he coaches like he played, team first. He keeps talking about, the crest on the front of the jersey. Well, that's what he was all about. There wasn't a better team player than Rick Tocchet, who stuck up for his teammates throughout his career. Tocchet deserves I will be shocked if he doesn't win the Coach of the Year, because I think no team in the league has exceeded their expectations like Vancouver did this year. And I think that – and don't discount Adam Foote and Sergei Gonchar. I think this entire staff, this coaching staff, is probably one of the best coaches' staff we have seen in Vancouver in many, many years.
I'll tell you what it means to me. I can't speak for everybody. I try to, but I don't. I'm happy for the fans.
Yeah.
This is fun. This is third time they've had a 50-win season. That's it. You know, division titles looking over 50-plus years, a rarity no matter what division they were in. It's just fun in the city.
Yes.
It's fun, and there's been just so many years of negativity. I'm happy. Even if it's unexpected, I don't think it's a blip. It's fun for the fans. I'm happy for them.
Yeah, the...
Absolutely.
The whiplash, right? Because it's not just that last season's results were poor. I mean, we've seen the Canucks have poor results or middling results, you know, 83 to 92 points or whatever in the recent past. It was the constant dysfunction, right, of last season that just sort of shrouded the team. And it does kind of feel like that cleared when Rick Tocchet came in. But I do think I'm sure it goes beyond him. I mean, not to do the like thing where I backhandedly call you gentlemen old while we do the crossover, but I'm curious to know if you've ever...
It's okay.
He's going to call you old.
No,
that's how you know he's about
I'm
to call you old.
I'm just curious to know because I can't think of one. I'm curious.
And Dan do it every Monday to me. Don't worry about it.
Can you think of another set of seasons in Canucks history where you've had as many things go wrong as went wrong last year, followed up immediately by a season
last
in which
year, yeah.
everything oh, has gone gosh, right like this?
Well, hold it. The Messier, McCaw, that string of years was pretty bad.
But did it get better?
Yeah.
Like, no, one season.
Yeah. No, it didn't.
We didn't but see a rebound for a
you
bit.
You just said something, though. You said something, Thomas. Last year was bad. So many tire fires off the ice. So many people in management fired and let go and all that. And the only years I can think that were of that nature were the Messier, McCaw years and Keenan, and there was a lot of dysfunction back then too, which is very comparable to last year and the last few years. Like Donnie said, I mean, it's been bleep hockey in this town for 10, 11, 12 years. I mean, let's be honest, you know, and this year just came out of the blue and surprised everybody, but Donnie nailed it. Look at Buffalo. They haven't made the playoffs in 13 years. The Red Wings just went 8 years.
Yep.
You're seeing a lot of this around the league. A lot of teams going 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years without playoffs, and Vancouver did too. But the fans in the city. And the reason we should talk about the fans is because all those years of bleep hockey, that rink was full. That rink didn't go down to 6,000-7,000 fans like it did in the 80s when we used to go to the Pacific Coliseum and there'd be 8,000 against the Quebec Nordiques on a Tuesday night. The last 10 years, the fans in this city still bucked up despite horrible teams and horrible mismanagement and ownership in the whole nine yards. So this city, more than any other city in the National Hockey League, definitely deserves this kind of season.
Well,
you know what
might be similar, guys, would be you mentioned the Messier era.
Yep.
Messier leaves, and at the end of that era, Messier was still around.
Yeah.
Brian Burke comes in.
Oh, right.
Right? Keenan's gone. He brings in Mark Crawford.
Yes.
And, you know, say what you want about Mark. When he came in, you had that feeling things were going to turn around, and they did. Now, they didn't have much playoff success with him. I love the brand of hockey they played, but that was a sexy team. Yeah. They played, you know, a high-powered offensive in a good way, hockey, and when, as opposed to a lot of the years. But that was similar to Tocchet coming in, and, hey, this guy, you could just feel it, that he knew what he was doing. And, again, not a lot of playoff success there. We'll see what happens with Tocchet. But that was similar. They turned things around fairly quickly.
So I think that 98-99 season, right, is the one where Bure holds out, okay, and then Mike Keenan pulls the goalie on Hockey Night in Canada with 8 minutes left in the Leafs game. And then says, "Well, what? It was my best chance to tie because I don't have Bure my GM, if he'd get off his keister and get me some offense, maybe I wouldn't have to embarrass him on Hockey Night in Canada and Toronto. So you had a lot of messes there. It's just that even once Keenan was replaced, oh, Keenan also, by the way, was fired by Gary Mason in the Globe and Mail. He reported it about 4 days before. Can you imagine 4 days?
Yeah.
I mean, we saw the Boudreaux thing, and that was like a week that festered, and we kind of knew it was coming. But, yeah, Gary Mason had it 4 days before the club announced it, I think because they were at the All-Star break.
Gee, I wonder where he got that from.
Oh, yeah. So I think we know.
Some messy stuff anyway with that season. It's just that the next year, it like took a couple of years before the West Coast Express really got up and running under Crow, whereas this was just like instantaneous. Yeah. Honestly, it's hard to fathom, and I don't think it diminishes the achievement this season. I think it enhances it.
Still a 25-point jump, though, from the 98-99. They were at 58 points. So the low was even lower in terms of the on-ice product, at least, than it was over the last couple of years. The dysfunction was similar, and then the rebound, you know, just kind of got them back to level footing there. But, you know, to your point, Rick, about how much the fans deserve this and how they've filled the buildings through some really tough times here, or the building through some really tough times, I think you're bang on. And for me, winning the division, I think the thing I'm most happy about is that I've noticed kind of a resurgence in optimism from the fans, because you guys know, and I'm sure you were hearing it, when they were dropping games to playoff teams on a regular basis there in March and early April, I'm sure you guys got a lot of panicked feedback. But I think that win over Edmonton on Saturday, taking care of the division, I think it's made everyone just a little more relaxed, a little more optimistic, a little more relaxed. And I think it's going to give people more of a chance to enjoy this playoff push, which they should, because it's been so long since they've had a team like this to cheer on in this city.
God, I hate saying this, but this could all be negative in a week and a half or 2 weeks. I honestly do. I mean, we're talking about this turnaround and the 50-win season. You know, we know what's possible, but I will say this. Hey. You know, that's a great point about the game Saturday. It doesn't look like it's possible. It looks like this team has its act together. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's the difference.
Surely
well,
we're not going
to be Boston last year, right?
Right. But surely we're not going to be negative about this season regardless, right? Me and Jamie have been disagreeing about this for a while, but I think
they get swept,
I think this season, this team could not win another game, and I'll still call it a smash success.
No, it's going to
pain.
Man, you win your division.
Oh my
gosh. You're in the running for the conference to the last day of the season. And I know, look, not all sweeps are created equal. And if it's a bunch of one goal games and overtime, that's maybe a little different, but it's going to be really anticlimactic. If they're bounced in the first round and it's a quick series,
it will be anticlimactic for sure. I don't think it'll happen, and maybe it's a little extreme, but say, you know, the fact is that this team's shown us so much. They got Pettersson done. I don't know. I really struggle to imagine that if you'd told me in July that we'd be here and then added, but they lost in the first round, I think we'd all have said, wow. You mean Quinn Hughes going to win the Norris? Rick Tocchet in the mix for Jack Adams. They've signed Pettersson long term. There was no off-ice drama. The season was placid. Lekaramäki popped. Their approach to quickly restocking looks like it could work. I would have said, wow, unbelievable. So I don't know. I think you gentlemen are getting a little greedy. I think Canucks fans should get a little greedy. I think the players and coaches on this team should get a little greedy going into the playoffs. But I think they've already blown the roof.
Your column in the Athletic, if they get swept in the Athletic, you will rip them apart. Guaranteed. And,
I won't.
And Jamie, you can run this clip again.
You know me. I'm too stubborn. Having said this, I won't.
Drance, you're the most negative guy on earth. It's in your blood. You're going to be out. You're going to be out looking for blood if they lose in round one.
How do you know my blood type? O negative.
But O negative. Oh, what a shock. What a shock.
He's negative, but he's contrarian too, right? So if everyone else is panicking and saying how bad they were, there's an opportunity for him to zig where everyone else is zagging, right?
Well, think about it. Before training camp, there were zero expectations for this hockey club. Yep. What are they now?
They've changed.
The goalpost has changed from no expectations to, hey, anything short of second, third, fourth round is going to be a disappointment.
See, I think that's it. I'm just not moving. I'm just not moving the goalposts.
I take your point about, hey, wow, like, look at it. Look at the season Quinn Hughes has had. Look at the season JT Miller has had. That's successful. But by the same token, you're getting these types of players or these types of seasons from your best players. You want to make the most of that. That's an opportunity to go deep when you're having those types of seasons.
You definitely don't want to miss the opportunity.
Thomas, do you honestly think that, like, if they were to get swept by, let's say, Nashville in the first round, do you honestly think that Rutherford and Tockett would be going, you know what, that was a great season.
Yeah.
After having a couple of beers after getting eliminated in game four.
No, not a chance.
That was really good. That was just fantastic. No way.
But in the big picture, I still think they'd be mad. But I think in the big picture, when you step back a month later and start, you know, planning out your offseason rationally, you'll say we are closer today than we were 12 months ago by an awful lot, and that's going to be regardless.
It would have to be one of those things where a team loses, gets crushed. Like Tampa Bay against Columbus loses to a team like Columbus, and then the next year they see the value in it that they learned a lesson.
That's what I'm
saying. It would take a year.
And I mean, this is, you know, we're not going to do another crossover before the playoffs, but this happens, right? Like, you get the Boston Bruins took the 2-0 lead over the Florida Panthers and still lost the first round, right? The Washington Capitals, the year they finally broke through and won the cup,
but
they lost the first two. No, but this just really quickly, like, you got to be able to park it. We're going to have huge emotional swings.
But was that? But do you think Boston looks as last year as a successful season? No, we blew an opportunity.
Well, that was Patrice Bergeron's last year, and they went all in on that team. That's totally different. I'm just saying, you can win the first two and it doesn't mean a lot. We saw that in 2011 in the Stanley Cup final. Like, there's a certain amount of level-headedness that I think the playoffs require if you're going to properly enjoy it. And it, first of all, level-headedness, not my strength, not this market's strength, and also not something this market's done in a while in terms of rooting for playoff hockey. So it's going to be a ton of fun to watch the reactions.
I referred to the riots in 94 and 2011, level-headedness.
Exactly.
That's a weak spot.
Yeah.
No, I'm saying that's not what we do well.
Yeah.
We do lots of things well done.
Hey, man, there's always this year to turn over a new leaf.
There's always this year.
About scheduling, and I know you guys were talking about it earlier. First, we are hearing Tuesday game one. That's a long time off for both teams if it is Nashville. I know, Rick, you and others have said, okay, sounds like Sunday. It does sound like it's going to be Sunday, but I'm also curious, Rick, are you hearing anything about what the rest of a schedule between Vancouver and Nashville could look like? Because you start to go through all the concert dates and everything, and it seems like it could be a pretty funky, pretty ugly schedule between these two teams, if that is, in fact, the matchup.
There's so many factors here, Jamie. I was told this morning, don't even attempt to try to figure it out right now.
All right.
You got to wait till you know what? But think about it. There's television. There's concerts.
Yep.
You know, they don't even 100% know who they're playing around one, right? There's so many factors. Like, okay, you can go and you can go and predict it's Nashville, okay? But still, if they win tomorrow, Dallas loses tonight against St. Louis, and now, okay, it's somebody else. There's just so many factors. All I was told is that it's probably going to be Sunday. And I think the Predators were not happy. They let the league know that, you know, sitting 7 days from Tuesday to Tuesday is not something any team wants. That's almost like a training camp. You know, training camps aren't even that long anymore. That's too many days for Nashville to sit. And I was told the Canucks weren't doing cartwheels about next Tuesday as well. So, you know what? It's really hard. I was told this morning, just, you know, wait a couple more days and then you'll have a better, clearer picture. But they keep changing, though, because there were people that were adamant that game one was going to be Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Now it's pushed to Sunday. And that's why I was told that, you know, things can change. They can still change from here on going forward.
All right, guys, next time we do the crossover, we'll be probably 2 games into a playoff series. We'll see. We'll see what the schedule ends up being.
I just hope they find a schedule where there's like an even flow to the series, you know? One of the concert bookings?
Yeah.
No. Ooh. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Wow, that didn't get a single laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My bad.
Rick.
Jamie, send him home. Send him home. Do
Sympathy
the rest
laugh.
Of the show by
Sympathy
yourself.
Sympathy laugh.
All right, guys, we'll talk next week. It's going to be fun. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks. Adios. All adios.
Right. Adios. That is, I don't know why I said adios, mirroring Rick's mannerisms back to him. That's never a good sign. Anyways, that was Don Taylor and Rick Dollywall from Donnie and Dolly on Czech TV joining us as they do every Wednesday on The Crossover. We'll take a break. Lots more to get into here on the other side. Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650 here. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance. We are live from the Kintech studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver. Online at DunbarLumber.com. JanPro, the leaders in commercial cleaning and janitorial. If your workplace demands a clean environment, contact JanPro for a free, no obligation quote. Visit JanPro.ca. I did enjoy the text from Rager there during the crossover when you were saying, oh, it could be a great season even if they get swept. And Rager texted in, the one time Drance is trying to be positive and we're all telling him to be negative instead. LOL. Which I do enjoy, the inversion of the dynamic there.
Honestly, it's more about, like, I'm pretty inflexible sometimes in moving off my takes. And, you know, the standard that I sort of suggested was reasonable for the Canucks this year prior to the season. And look, I'll just reread it. This was my first column of the year after my summer vacation. So this was, like, from July. And I said, in 10 months' time, if this club is significantly improved structurally, check. If the club's quick approach to rebuilding looks like it's got a shot, check. If their prospects pop or at least meaningfully develop, check. If the on-ice bets the club has placed look sage, again, check. If the off-ice drama was a divot rather than a permanent feature of how this hockey operations department functions, check. And if Pettersson is signed long-term, check. Then we should reasonably call that a success, whether the club plays postseason hockey or not. I wrote that in July. I see no reason to adjust my take.
So this texter, and I think this is a good take, this texter says it can be a successful season and a massively disappointing playoffs,
yes,
at the same time.
Exactly.
And
right.
I think that does get to the root of it. Like, this
exactly
is a classic
right.
Satyar Shah, two things can be true at the same time. Where if you take a step back and look at the entire organization from kind of, you know, a 30,000 foot view, what they've accomplished, the prospects, all of that, stabilizing it, Rick Tocchet's performance, it's impossible not to feel more confident about this team going into next year than you did coming into this year, regardless of what happens in the playoffs. It's also, I think, completely fair, and I made this point in the crossover, if you know you have a Norris caliber season, an all likelihood Norris trophy winning season from Quinn Hughes. You have JT Miller being a two-way beast, scoring 100 points, right? Brock Besser scoring 40 goals. Dakota Joshua popping. I mean, we can get into your forward report cards here in a second, but suffice it to say, there's a lot of A's handed out for good reason. You have so many things going right for your team, and if you go out without putting up much of a fight in the first round, I get what you're saying, that you can't avoid calling this season a success. I also don't think you can avoid calling that a massive disappointment. Well, you know what I mean? When you have that many guys who've played so well this year, and you're in this position, you've won your division, home ice, all of that, it's a massive disappointment.
Well, I get it, especially because it's going to be hard to land as many glue contributors that perform at this level, mm-hmm, right? I mean, Teddy Bluger was, you know, according to Dom's net rating model, right, like in the 80th percentile tier for defensive contributors this season. When you think about it, and you think about, you know, how many penalty killing minutes he's logged, and the team going from disaster 4-on-5 to, you know, almost within shouting distance of 80%, almost league average, and how big a deal that was for this team making the postseason. When you think about Ian Cole, right, and how well Ian Cole's performed. You know, and then the difficulty of potentially retaining him, Zadorov, and the add that was what that's meant for the club. The Hronek raise that's going to kick in, Pettersson getting his raise, tough decision looming on Myers. I mean, it's not impossible by any means, especially with the way that this club has found affordable depth. Even when their team, like even when the team didn't do well, they still had like Kuzmenko on an ELC, and Dakota Joshua was a great find right off the hop. You know, so you like that part of it. I don't want to bet against a management group that's on like a 2-year pro scouting heater, figuring out how to, you know, build in that connective tissue again. But they're going to have to do it on a shoestring budget. It's not going to be straightforward. There is a world where, and I'm not saying it's a likely world. I'm saying there is a scenario where this might be one of this team's best shots. So I get the urgency, but I also think if we're walking into this postseason and considering the Canucks as a team that's not playing with house money, I think we should be considering this team a team that's going into the postseason with house money, and that this is going to be a ton of fun and a key learning experience for the group. But I don't go in with huge expectations. I go in more with curiosity to see how far they can push it.
I also think part of this will come down to, you know, this is such a cliched sports talk term, right? But legacy, the memory of this season, how this season is remembered. Now, part of that can only be determined by what comes after, right? Because as Donnie was bringing up and you were bringing up, right, there's the versions of this story where really good team loses in the first round and it ends up becoming like the turning point for their ultimate success. We obviously can't know if that's going to be the case until, you know, if and when they have that ultimate success. But let's say that doesn't happen, right? And let's say, you know, if they did go out early, but it doesn't, you know, pay off with a Stanley Cup victory in the next 3 or 4 years, I think it's going to really negatively impact how people look back on this season, right? Going from, wow, that was such an incredible year. Everything broke right, man. Quinn Hughes won the Norris. Rick Tocchet was so good. Oh, but yeah, then it ended on a downer. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to diminish the incredibly fun memory of this season if it ends on a really flat note in the playoffs right away.
Well, teams are defined in the playoffs, right? And this is one of the things that can be frustrating about hockey is, you know, you can have an 8-year window where you're one of the 5 best teams in the league and you get out of the first round once, as we've seen in Toronto. You can have one of those like St. Louis Blues type runs where, you know, you make it out of the first round a couple times, but you're never in the conference final. And then maybe down the line, the hockey history is littered with teams that need some shots before they get over the mountain, right? Which has always been kind of the point of the anything can't happen take. It's that you need to be a great team. You need to be a great team to win 16 come playoff time. And you know, this team's opened up, we hope, a window, but tomorrow's guaranteed to nobody and to no team, right? There's going to be a need to do it again, right? That said, you know, I do think one thing that the Canucks, one real sense of stakes is it doesn't matter whether you do it again if you do it once. Right, like
100%.
In some ways, it doesn't matter.
If it's a one-hit wonder, but it ends the right way, great. That's fine.
Let's go. Yeah. So, look, at the end of the day, man, I'm just so excited to cover and watch playoff hockey. It's so different than everything we've been watching, especially, like, here's one thing that I noticed, actually, while doing the player report cards, and I wish that I'd noticed it earlier. Starting in about March 15th, there is a significant downward trend line on JT Miller's ice time 5-on-5.
Interesting.
Like down almost 2 minutes a game since March 15th. That's a month of games in which Miller's been like closer to 13 minutes than 15. And there was an interesting stretch too where that corresponded with a drop in Pettersson's minutes. And then Pettersson's minutes spiked back up. And I'm curious to know, like, was that like, let's rest our key guys, but then Pettersson, maybe his confidence was struggling a bit, so we want to get him out a little more. But Miller and Besser's ice time dropped like a stone in the last month. And I'm telling you right now, that wasn't performance.
No, absolutely not.
So, I wish I'd noticed it in real time. But there's a sense, I think, that we've had sort of simmering beneath the surface that maybe this team was managing things a little bit differently, trying different line combinations, auditioning Archdeep Baines and Pod Colson and on and on. Almost like gearing up for the playoffs as opposed to like life or death, let's win the division, life or death, let's win every game here. And that's about to flip. Like, I can promise you this, I'll be shocked if I look at a post-game stat sheet after game one and JT Miller's under 20 minutes.
Yeah, for sure.
I'll be shocked. My mouth will drop.
We can get back into this conversation, but we did get some fresh audio in from Rick Tocchet. We might have to dump out of it before the end of the segment here because we got Jason Bukala coming up on the other side. But I am curious to hear what Tocchet has to say, especially about the team's plans going into that last game in Winnipeg tomorrow. So let's hear from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet. Technical difficulties?
Barely froze.
Oh, man. I was so excited. I did love, by the way, that the Canucks PR account specified that the practice today would be short. I don't believe they've ever I've never seen that before. They say like what the schedule is for tomorrow, and yesterday they said short practice at Rogers Arena. Giving the guys a nice short practice at Rogers Arena after clinching the division. But it's a great point about the ice time. And it is interesting that we didn't really pick up that in real time as it was happening, but it is something that, all right, we got Rick Tocchet here now. All right, here is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet.
Yeah, it's 20-minute sweat. You know, I don't know, rumors that we start Sunday or something. I don't know if it's for sure, but, you know, just try to backtrack what day's off and get ready for Sunday. I think it's good to get a little morning, like a 20-minute sweat, and then we'll figure out what happens later.
Yeah. Rick, you've got half a dozen guys who played every game this season, yeah. Especially your core guys.
Yeah.
What does that say about them? What does that say about the preparation? And then leading to that, will you play them all tomorrow?
Yeah, well, the first question is obviously a testament to them, you know, coming into camp, you know, working hard. It's hard to play 82 games, you know, especially, you know, being a division champion. You know, there's a lot of tough games you got to play to win. So your body goes through a lot. So saying that, it's incredible. You know, to play 82 games, it's tough. Second part, I'm not quite sure. We're still, it's a hour-to-hour thing. We don't know how we're going to approach the game tomorrow. But, you know, I think some guys might play, some guys might not. I honestly haven't at this point made a decision. We'll see how it goes.
What are those discussions like, and how much of that is also impacted by your players who may want to play?
Bumps and bruises, you know. You talk to Hughes, he feels great today, you know, but that doesn't mean he plays. I don't know if he's going to play tomorrow. Like, these are the guys I have to kind of, we'll figure out. You know, it's a tricky thing. You know, I talked to a high-profile coach this morning, very high-profile again. He said, you know, some guys got a chance to score 70 goals. Some guys got a chance to 100 points. So as a coach, you're in a tough spot because these are huge milestones, but you're also worried about your team. So what do you do? So that's why every hour you got to figure it out.
Everybody traveling?
Yeah, everybody's going to be traveling, yep. Maybe one player, I'm not sure. Yeah, we're still discussing it, sorry.
And then tonight's result in Dallas, like, will that affect what you do?
Honestly, I don't think so. I think we'll make a decision before that. I mean, it's more of, you know, looking at if we play Sunday, the day off. We got some guys who got some aches and pains, and is it better for them not to play? Like, these are the things we got to go through, yeah, and that's what coaches and management have to do. You have to play all the scenarios, and then you go from there. You know, I think it's a hard one because, you know, you always, for me, I want to play every game to win, but there's also, you got to be prudent in how you put your lineup up going for the next, you know, the playoffs coming up.
Will you watch that Dallas game, or are you just going to let the chips fall where they?
No, it's not that. I watch a hockey mostly every night. So, I mean, obviously it's on, I'll watch it wherever we go. For dinner tonight, see what game they have on. Hopefully they'll let us put the game we want. They usually do. But, yeah, I'd like to watch that game. I would love watching Dallas anyways. Like, you know, I think they have a great coach.
Do you have to still make a decision on Thatcher as well? Like, it seemed to indicate that you would probably like another game.
Yeah, I mean, that's one I think it's for easy for us. You know, I think especially he wants to play. And he was out there today, felt great. So I think it's important that he gets his reps in too. Well, if it turns into shinny and, you know, you stop 40 shots by the second period, he won't be in there that long, put it that way. So hopefully I don't have to make that decision.
Rick, do you want to share?
All right, that's a little bit of what Rick Tocchet had to say after practice today. And confirms that Thatcher Demko will play. Thatcher Demko wants to play. Interesting there, though, that if the whatever team he puts out in front of him doesn't hold up their end of the bargain and is exposing Demko a little too much, that he won't be shy about pulling Demko out of the game. And, you know, in terms of the rest of the lineup that that will travel to Winnipeg or play in Winnipeg, still making some decisions, did say that there's maybe one player who might not make the trip, some other guys with some aches. You know, is it better, as he was wondering, is it better to get them in? Is it better to give them that time off? I mean, on the roster still, right, they have, you know, the scratches from yesterday. So Friedman, Juulsen, Phil DiGiuseppe, Neil Zaman. You could theoretically, we talked about this yesterday, call up a couple guys from Abbotsford too.
Yeah,
so you could make up to six lineup changes. It doesn't sound like it's going to be that drastic, though.
And I don't think they're actually, like, I'm sure there'd be a way creatively accounting.
For cap space.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think they're going to have the flexibility to actually like bring a guy like a Sheldon Dries tier dude up. So I think they're just going to roll with more or less what they've got. And I'd imagine we'll see like one guy's not traveling. That doesn't mean that there's only going to be one change.
Right.
Like, yeah. I'd be pretty surprised if we don't see all of Friedman.
I was going to say, I think get them all
Amon,
in.
Yeah.
Cause none of those all of those players, it's very foreseeable. There's a situation where you could need them in the playoffs. Right. Yeah. So get them that last game to keep them fresh at the very least.
Well, and like, you know, if you want to get just like a little more live action for like PP1, you know what I mean? Like you can put those guys in fourth line minutes, right? Which again, the Hronek, Hughes, Besser, Miller. On March 15th, the club just started absolutely shredding their 5-on-5 minutes, like completely reduced their roles. This team's been gearing up for this for a while. Thursday night's just another night of that.
Yeah, so that's the latest from Rick talking on how he is viewing tomorrow night's regular season finale against Winnipeg. Might mean something. The conference might be at stake. It might not. It'll depend on what happens between Dallas and St. Louis tonight. We will talk to our guy, Jason Bukala, from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, former NHL scout as well. That's coming up next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz, live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Now joining us, as he does every Wednesday here on the show from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, former NHL scout, he is Jason Bukala. Jason, thank you as always. How are you today?
Doing fantastic, fellas. How are you?
We're doing well, man, but we are excited, impatient, I would say, at this point to get the playoffs started. I think the best word for it. You know, I was making the point earlier in the show, March into April, I think there was some angst about how the Canucks were playing, maybe needing to get back in form. And I know it's just the last two games, and last night was not a playoff atmosphere at all. But, you know, with that win on over Edmonton on the weekend and then wrapping up the division, how do you feel about the Canucks now with just one game remaining on the regular season going into the playoffs?
I feel like we're being disrespected to a degree. I have to say that. I got to get that off my chest a little bit. I mean, as a group, I mean, you know, I'm hearing some noise out there that, you know, teams like Nashville, for example, aren't concerned. They're not necessarily scared to play the Vancouver Canucks here in the next coming days if it ends up being Nashville. And, you know, I thought that the Edmonton game was a statement game. And I'm not just talking about the scoreboard. I was looking more for the tangibles, you know, like Lindholm checking Drysdale, for example, guys bodying up and, you know, Soucy playing hard along the wall and, you know, the game amongst the game within the game, if you will. You know, it's obviously the scoreboard, and you want your star players to produce offensively. And then, you know, Demko coming back last night, I feel pretty good, guys. I have to be honest. Like, I feel like we're pretty much – there was a couple weeks ago, I thought we were tinkering. I thought it was a little bit of a melting pot, and I wasn't feeling – I wasn't sure about, you know, how things were going to kind of get glued together, if you will. And I feel pretty good right now. I really do. I think we got some depth. I think we I think we're playing the right way for the most part. And I think there's an understanding amongst the group of, you know, what your role is and what the expectation is going to be here in the next few days. So I'm excited to get going for everybody out west, and it's been a long time coming.
Books, we were doing report cards on forwards at the Athletic last night. So last night I was just like looking into all the data and sort of looking at my game notes and trying to figure out, and obviously a lot of A's, a lot of A minuses. Like, I started handing out A minuses to guys who've been A performers just because I didn't want to, I wanted some variety. There's been so many. I mean, even a guy like Teddy Blueger, right, who's just been a horse defensively and has matched his career high in points and on and on. And it's like, how's this not an A? This is an A, but A minus. Anyway, I'm curious because the one guy I really struggled with was Lindholm, who you brought up, and I gave him an incomplete because fundamentally that trade, his Canucks tenure will not be judged on what's happened so far. It's about what's next. With Lindholm, just generally, what have you seen from him that you think might matter come playoff time?
I feel like he's more comfortable right now, or he appears to be slotted more comfortably than he was when he first arrived. I had high hopes when he first arrived, you know, when he's going to play with Pettersson, and I thought that we were going to potentially elevate our offense because, let's be honest, it was substandard for him this year in Calgary, and I was hoping it was going to go to another level in Vancouver. Well, you know, there's been some hurdles, some bends in the road, if you will. And now what I'm seeing is I'm totally in agreement with you. It isn't complete because this team is going to be a playoff team. Like, if they didn't make that deal, guys, like if Kuzmenko was still on the roster, and even if he's an extra in the playoffs, like, you still got that ace in the hole that maybe can score a big power play goal in playoffs, you know, despite his warts. So they were still going to be a playoff team and, you know, hopefully positioned relatively well even before that deal. So now that the offense hasn't been there with Lindholm, what I'm curious to see is his defensive contribution and his checking and his, you know, his faceoff pedigree. I mean, he is 59% on the year in the draws. And, you know, if you ran the table for the, or pardon me, in Vancouver, he's 59%. If you ran the table for the whole year, he'd be their best faceoff guy. And obviously on the right side of the ice, you know, on his strong side, that's a bonus. Mm-hmm. So incomplete, I think, is fair. And, if you don't mind me saying, too, you brought up something that's really cool. Like, when you're doing your grading there for the Athletic, I do the same thing for, like, my partner at Cap Friendly.
Right.
And one thing that people have to understand is that, and I think you probably run into this, too, is when you give out an A to a third-line player, you're giving them out, you're giving an A out to a third-line player not only based on what he's done for that team and played to an identity, but also compared to his peer group playing the same role across the league. And guys like Teddy Blueger and, you know, Lafferty, these types of guys, these guys are enormously important. Dakota Joshua come playoff time. And I'm glad to hear that you graded them the way you did.
Yeah. So there's a lot that I want to get into here because the Lindholm faceoffs thing in particular, he's north of 55% since the Canucks acquired him in the defensive zone, right, where he has to show his hand first. There's a lot of PK draws thrown in there too. So that's like a big shining positive. His 5-on-5 form has been fine. It's just that it's only been fine. He's still logging fewer PK minutes than Blueger. And, you know, his points rate 5-on-5, in addition to the fact that he didn't stick on PP1, has been like fourth line level since the acquisition. Yeah. Do you have any concerns about where he's at? Because as I was sort of thinking about it and thinking about whether to give him like a C plus or a C or an incomplete or B minus or whatever, you know, I didn't see a lot of stuff in either the data or my game notes that made me think this guy's on the verge of breaking out.
Yeah, I mean, I think fine. There's nothing worse than being evaluated in sports when somebody says, yeah, he was fine. Like, that's just like a kick between the eyebrows, if you know what I mean. That's a horrible thing. Nobody likes to be looked at like that. But you're absolutely right. That's all he's been is fine. I mean, if you go back to the Arizona game even, you know, he was -2 in that game. That was the game that he logged the most amount of ice time shorthanded and time on ice overall in a long while, you know, since before his injury, for example. I still trust that he's going to be able to get dialed in a category. And so if we just want to look at a couple of key categories, obviously defensive zone faceoffs is one. Like, he was man-o-man-o against Draisaitl on the defensive zone the other night, guys, and he did a really good job. Like, he zoned in on that. He knew his responsibility. I think he's even spoken, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he's speaking openly now, too, about that he's less worried about point production, more worried about, you know, checking and doing all the other things that are going to lead to team success in the playoffs. So, listen, on balance, that's exactly what he's been, is fine. Do I have hope, and do I see some uptick here and some potential to be better? I do. I feel okay. I feel like if he can check, win draws, hopefully take away some of the PK minutes. You know, the games in the playoffs, they're funny. As we all know, less will be called or more is going to be called. I never feel like we're kind of running right in the middle. It's like, oh, God, there's too many tonight. Or, geez, there's not enough. You know what I mean? It's not like, oh, that was okay.
Books, Books, the data says you get more penalties called in the first few games of a series, dwindling to nothing as the series gets to the point in.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. The more they hate each other, the less they call. So, you know, and that's what makes playoff hockey fun. I think that I don't want to beat him up. I think that it's been easy to beat him up. And you know what? He's deserved it in terms of what our expectation was. And I think our expectation was fair. Let's be clear here. Like, I really expected him to kind of level out the top half of the lineup. It looks like he's going to be in the three, I would assume. And so he's going to check against middle six, potentially, you know, second lines. And he's capable of doing that. This is not too long ago, this was a Selke type finalist, so he's capable, guys.
Yeah, and to your point about, you know, the expectation was that he would probably fit into the top six, either at center or the wing. That hasn't worked out, and one of the things that's done is, you know, it's forced Rick Tocchet, I think, to go with maybe some, I don't want to say less than ideal, but, you know, you look at some of the guys they have in the top six now. Pugh Suter has fit really well with JT Miller and Brock Besser. You have Ilya Mikheyev with Pettersson and Hoglander. I know Mikheyev made a really nice play to help set up a goal last night against Calgary, but we've also seen a lot of instances of him struggling to finish, struggling to contribute offensively this year. How much of a concern is Ilya Mikheyev in that spot for you, or do you have confidence that he can contribute to that line in the playoffs?
I'm not going to go out on a limit, Sam. I'm overly confident. I mean, honestly, like with Mikheyev, 11 goals on the year, and you know, he didn't look like he could put it in the ocean there for a while, right? Like the chances he was getting. And the one concern I do have there too, guys, is that year over year, his penalty killing has dropped off considerably, right? Because he is a speed guy. He's generally been able to get in the lane and kill plays in the past. He's a wild card for me. So other guys have gone past him in terms of my trust. But having said that, I do see some synergy in the lineup, and you want to be hard to check up, you know, through all four lines, if you will, and hopefully get the matchups you deserve on the back end as well. I see good balance here, but I'm not going to go on a limb and say that he's the first guy that comes to mind when I say that, you know, he's going to be key to winning a series. If the puck's on his stick, and he does something great with it, and we do get a win, well, I'm obviously going to give him a pat on the back, but I'm not holding my breath. The one thing I would say with Suter and Mikheyev is that when you play them up in the lineup like that, they do have pace, right? Like, they can play with pace, and they can dart to areas and extend a play. So that complements your skill, people.
Books, the matchup's not set, but I've been getting made fun of a little bit locally for suggesting that
that's a shocker.
But specifically for this, because I've dared to suggest that two guys to watch for that I think could be game breakers for the Predators are Tommy Novak and Luke Evangelista. Give me your take. Am I off my rocker to suggest that those are possible Predators X factors in the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, the Preds are generally a one-line team, you know, offensively for the most part, right? They're top-heavy there. But you just brought up, like, the Novak. Tommy Novak is a guy that flies way under the radar in the league. And I know they extended him there. There was kind of rumblings they might not. He might be a guy on the move at the deadline. He's got a ton of skill, fellas. And Evangelista is another guy that he can play in all situations. Luke Evangelista is not a one-trick pony. So if you sleep on guys like that who can play A with pace, but really have good puck touch, like they can handle it and they can make plays in traffic or, you know, it'll be on and off their stick real quick. You know, you're going to have to body up against those two, like religiously, like make life miserable on them from the drop of the puck. I don't have a problem dealing with the Preds depth overall. I really don't. I actually think we're going to win the goaltending battle as well. So I, you know, just be hard and heavy on those guys, but you're right. Like those are two under the radar guys that the Preds will push out there and they can definitely surprise you. Novak's like he'll sneaky skill. Like he's a really good player.
You know, we don't know that it's going to be Nashville just yet, although it certainly is looking that way. We'll see if we find out based on the result against between Dallas and St. Louis tonight. But, you know, as you were saying, Nashville does have some dangerous skilled players, although they are a little top heavy offensively. If it is Nashville versus the Canucks, what would be the kind of big concern from a Canucks perspective for you with facing the Predators?
Well, you know, at the top of the lineup, they can come at you in waves. So, you know, you got obviously Forsberg's a shooter. You're going to get a lot of offense from the back end from Roman Josi, who's, you know, this is going to be fun. If it does end up being Nashville, we're pretty lucky because we're going to see Josi and Hughes in the same playoff series, which is fun for the game. They've also got some guys on the, like, some gritty kind of veteran, like Sissons can check and he's used in all situations. You know, he's got a little grease to him at 30 years old. Ryan McDonagh, don't forget, past Stanley Cup champion, leader there. But honestly, guys, like when you get past, you know, Nyquist and Forsberg and those types of players, it's going to come down to how many minutes can Ryan O'Reilly log against the top of the Vancouver Canucks lineup. He's not a burner, but he's a crafty player who's really good in the faceoff dot. Can you guys wear him down? Can you make him track 200 feet and really push the play? I think that's going to be a key because Ryan O'Reilly really stirs the drink on balance for that forward group.
Books, about a month ago, and it sort of happened without us commenting or noticing all that much, but about a month ago, Hronek, Hughes, Miller, Besser, and Pettersson for a bit, and then his ice time spiked back up, started to see their ice time drop really precipitously. Like, if you look at it as a rolling average of their last 10 games, we're talking about a difference of 2 to 3 minutes each guy, right? For the defenders, it's like 22 minutes a night, 5-on-5 to 19. For the forwards, like, you know, 15 or 16 down to 12 or 13. Canucks have been gearing up for the playoffs a bit. Does that change how you view some of what we've seen from them in the last month of the year?
No, honestly, that statistic now, guys, I think that, you know, it's 82 games is a marathon. We know that it goes in ebbs and flows. We know that guys are banged up here, there, and everywhere. But you also want to challenge guys like the Connor Garlands of the world or the Holanders or even when Joshua comes back. I'm just, you know, you want to challenge them with more in a window. Like I thought that when Cole had to play more there a couple weeks ago, I thought it was a struggle. I'm not going to lie. When I watched Myers get overextended, especially on the penalty kill, he becomes far too stationary. Like his rotation isn't good enough and he's not fronting it well enough. So we're going to get right back up into the Hughes is going to be in the 26 minute mark. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Heronic's going to be that as well. And it doesn't matter because you got to do whatever you got to do at this time of year to win and make it, you know, just keep riding whatever the wave is that presents itself. Zadorov will be a wild card for me, like how he handles the puck. You know, and he's another guy on the penalty kill. The penalty kill is going to be extremely important. I think we all know that, right? You know, let's assume in the first two games of the series, if you set the tone and you're having to kill more at the beginning of the series, like you guys are indicating, compared to the end, we're going to have to get the job done early to set the tone win-wise, hopefully early. So guys like Zadorov are going to be extremely important as well, because when he stops moving his feet and doesn't front it well enough, the Canucks are susceptible from the bumper down low and around their crease to get scored on. So, you know, the wild card and all this, it's not really a wild card. You know, Demko, I thought he looked great last night. He looked like he was probably more than rested. Like, he looked like a guy that was probably ready to come back sooner. I don't know if you guys got that, but like his flow in the net, doesn't it feel totally different when you see him in the crease, guys? Like his crease composure, his size, the way he fronts the puck and everything.
Yeah, he's terrifying. Honestly, there's times where the Canucks take an early lead where I almost feel sorry for the opposition on nights that he's dialed. Like, that's how it feels in the building. I don't know if that's how opposing shooters feel, but it, like, he'll just, you know, make these difficult saves calmly a couple times, and you just can sense it. The confidence of the Canucks, the sort of like, oh, man, from the other team. Like, I'm like, oh, this is wild.
He made a save in the second period. It worked below the goal line, worked out front the crease. It was a small lateral push, but he ate it. Like, that's a big body fronting the puck type save. And it's boring to the listener to hear it, but I'm here to tell you, this is a goaltender. There's not many of these guys in the league. They can hold a team in the game for the coach to get through the lineup a couple of times. So, like, call it 8 minutes, okay? You turn your lineup over a couple of times. The guys are a little tight. You know, they're still getting wet. And here, you got a goaltender who can hold them in for that type of time. Conversely, as it goes later, he can also get in the head of the opponent if they're not beating him. You know, like, they got to beat him with a BB, and, you know, he's stopping everything in sight. So, like, it's been a long time. Like, we're talking Roberto Luongo back in the day, like that type of confidence going into playoffs with goaltending in Vancouver. And I know it's been a long time since we've been here, but I feel good. I feel good about that, and he looks good.
Yeah, that was about all you could have asked for from Thatcher Demko in his return last night, just the way he looked in that. You're absolutely right. And, you know, it sounds like Rick Tocchet saying he's going to at least start the game in Winnipeg on Thursday. It'll be interesting to see how Rick Tocchet handles the rest of the lineup, right? Whether he gives some guys the day off, whether he wants them to get in there and maybe just reduces his ice time. How would you approach this situation, right? With the game probably doesn't mean anything. You know, Demko's in, so you want to make sure guys are giving a decent effort in front of him, but you also want to take the opportunity potentially to rest some guys.
Yeah, interesting kind of conundrum you find yourself in, really, isn't it? But you have your starting goaltender, your star goaltender, who's coming off injury. The last thing you want to do is make him, because he's a competitive guy, he doesn't want to get beat, so you don't want to overextend him by exposing him to more than he deserves to be exposed. And so what that means is that even if you peel back some minutes on whoever it is up front, because Winnipeg is going to do the same thing. So it's going to be, you know, tit for tat, but you want to compete hard in front of him, because it's immensely important that he gets a feel for the way we're going to play as a group, how competitive we're going to be. And you don't want him to injure himself just because he's overextending himself, because we're a little lazy in front of him. So, I think that, you know what, athletes are funny. You know, even when you call it a nothing game, I don't know about you guys, but I'll go shoot pool with my wife, and it's for nothing but beers and quarters. But I'm going to tell you something. She's a good pool player, and I still want to whoop her, even though it means absolutely nothing. You know what I mean? We're just programmed a certain way.
My wife and I play this Italian card game, Books, called Scopa. Okay? And it's an awesome game. Highly recommended. And obviously, it's like something she grew up playing and something I didn't. And I'm not kidding when I tell you that I have beaten her like twice in 6 years. Like, it's, and I'll go up like 10-0, you know what I mean? And then she'll have these big comebacks. And to this day, I'll get like frustrated to the point that we have to stop playing.
There you go. She's so good at it. She's rope-a-doping you. She's a pro. That's awesome. Man.
You're flipping the table over?
100%. And then she'll say things like, "You're not fun to play games with." And it's like, this is ridiculous.
sounds like a skill issue, Dretz.
It is.
But that's the way athletes are programmed, right? Yeah. Fellas, like, you know, like, nobody wants, we just don't know how, like, these guys don't know how to mail in a game. They want to stay healthy. The coaches want to make sure they're healthy. But you also don't want to, they're not going to create a bad habit in 60 minutes. But, you don't want to. It's funny. The less you push yourself, the more susceptible you are to getting a shot off the ankle or wearing one on the chin. You know, like weird things happen when you're not pushing. So they'll be active enough. I'll put it to you that way.
All right, Jason. Next week we'll have this chat and we'll be in the middle of a playoff series. Can't wait. Thanks for doing this. Looking forward to chatting next week.
Amazing, fellas. Looking forward to it. Thanks for having me on and. Go Canuck.
Absolutely. That is Jason Bukla from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, former NHL scout joining us here on the program as he does every Wednesday. We'll do the whiteboard in the final segment to wrap things up here, but I did just want to pass along this quote from Utah Jazz owner Ryan Smith, of course, prospective owner of the Coyotes here. This is from via Arash McKazy, sports reporter, who says, Utah Jazz owner Ryan Smith on the Coyotes relocating to Salt Lake City. There's no secret. Not everything on the internet is true. But in this case, it's true. Don't believe everything you read on the internet, kids. But no, you can believe this. Don't worry.
This guy's going to be super fun. By the way.
I think your point about... get ready for the competitiveness surge from that franchise or whatever we're calling it, the new franchise, and they buy all the players. I don't know. It's such a weird situation, but he's going to do so much business this summer. They're going to have one of the busiest, most active, aggressive summers we've seen in a long time.
Like the news happened while we were on air, and I was just looking at sport tech data for the NBA salary cap, and I was like, this guy spends. And then when you really dive into it and realize he handed out $400 million worth of contracts to Gobert and Donovan Mitchell,
mm-hmm.
$400 million within months of buying the team. And then when it didn't work, hired the top name on the market in Danny Ainge and was willing to blow it up and has like done this high resource rebuild in Utah that's been pretty interesting, even if it hasn't paid off dividends yet. I mean, this is a savvy guy.
I also just think the dynamic of it'd be one thing if it was
and
the traditional.
Engaged.
Well, it would be one thing if it was the traditional expansion process, right? And you had like 2 years between the time it was awarded and when you started, and you could build that grassroots excitement and everything. We're looking at what? Like a 6 month turnaround from relocation to when they play their first game. You don't have the time to kind of build that hype. I think in that situation, even more so, you need to hit the ground running with a really competitive product from day one.
The other question that is going to be interesting here is like, what does this mean for Bill Armstrong, right? The Coyotes general manager. And like, I feel bad for him.
Well, you're talking about incomplete grades.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
It's just such a unique circumstance that general managers of that team have to operate in. How can you extrapolate to what it would look like in another situation? It's almost impossible.
And I mean, this guy's been making like 40 draft picks a year because he can't pay guys. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, and you know, Shane Doan looking like an interesting hit in the second round. JJ Moser is a regular from the second round. Gunther, obviously, a home run pick. That Oliver Ekman-Larsson trade is like a work of art. They're loaded with draft capital, which is the other thing. Like, you add money into this equation with all this young talent. Like, any big-name player, you want to make a splash? Any big-name player, any Jack Eichel, any Trevor Zegras-type situation,
yeah,
right? They are going to be able to win the bidding in whatever sweepstakes they want, if they decide to. Like, that's baked in because of what Armstrong's going to hand off. I just hope, like, honestly, I think he deserves a shot to see it through. That's my view. I think there's enough really good work here that he should get a shot to see it through with a bit of cash, but it'll be interesting to see what actually happens.
And just quickly, more from Ryan Smith, who, by the way, speaking at the Sports Business Journal's World Congress of Sports Conference in LA. Sure. Sounds great. I have incredible faith in the people of Utah. We show up, it'll be packed. I'm excited about that and showing that. There's so much work to do from the practice facility on down to everything else, but we'll get it done. And I think, I'm sure, part of that work includes dramatically improving the roster and the product on the ice going in to next year. So there you go. That's the first on the record confirmation of anybody that this is happening. We all knew it was happening, but
Let's go.
Last game for the Coyotes in Arizona tonight.
You know what they say about Salt Lake City? You can fly direct from Vancouver.
Unlike Nashville.
Oh, man.
Oof. All right. As much as I enjoy your frustration with it, it's like the joke's on me because it also impacts the show, the travel schedule. So that's
it's fine.
I'm kind of laughing despite myself.
I just can't believe how much time I've spent in Nashville.
A lot. Okay, we gotta go, or at least for this segment. We still have one more segment. We're not finishing the show. We'll do the whiteboard in the final segment of the show here. Coming up on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.